Welcome, Taha, to the Leaders Who Care series. It's great to have you here, man.
Thank you so much, Mark. So good to see you again.
You too. Shout out to Stephen Ibaraki for the kind intro. Took a while for us to make it happen, but we're here, and that's great. So best way to start is, before we get into the business stuff, if you can just introduce yourself, where you're from, where you are now, family, maybe something you've never told the world you want to reveal now, something like that, and then we'll go from there.
I'm Taha. So great to be here. Nothing really in particular that I haven't told the world.
How about where you're from originally? Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I was born in Switzerland, grew up in various countries because my father worked for the UNHCR, so serving refugees. My mom worked for different other international organizations. And so we grew up around the world, originally Sri Lankan. And we started Goodwall because of our exposure growing up, seeing that we were very, very privileged to have some of the opportunities that unfortunately very few have, which is access to confidence, good education, being able to meet other people from different backgrounds, which we were just speaking about non-flict earlier, which is more important now than ever. That's a little bit about me.
So what were you like as a kid, teenager, running around the world? And so were you like a reader? Were you an organizer? Did you play video games, sports? What did you do?
A reader, yes, definitely. Did enjoy that. Enjoyed sport as well. Outside of school, I think always had a bit of an entrepreneurial drive. Enjoyed Shark Tank and Dragon's Den in school, which I think I would like to think inspired us when we weren't ready to pitch ourselves. And actually, that led us to building a program on Goodwall, which we'll speak about later, which essentially has young people participate in, think of it as Shark Tank meets TikTok. So that kind of, and we fund, like, you know, where young people pitch and the rest. That was cool. And alongside my brother, we started our entrepreneurial journey pretty young, but it was just, we enjoyed solving problems, I think.
Well, that's cool. That's pretty cool. And in different living in different countries must have made a big difference. Let's look at your journey a little bit. You started out education wise, business and economics. You went to HEC Lausanne, great school, Oxford, not a bad one either, actually. So, and you've had all this international exposure and experiences. What were you envisioning back then that what may happen?
That's a great question. I think, you know, so we started, our first business idea, serious business idea, was building a platform that would sell art from emerging markets online. And this was in high school. So we'd started building that, actually. The problem was, we thought, so we just thought it was not fair that these amazing young artists, I bought my first piece of art when I was 16, and amazing young Sri Lankan artists. And I thought, it doesn't make sense that this is so undervalued, or how come? So we said, okay, the problem is access. So let's build this platform. But we realized, you know, we didn't really understand it, which is why I actually studied art history on the side in university. And then I went and I did my first internship, my only internship at Christie's, the art auction house, actually one of two. The first was at Standard Chartered, a bank, and the second was at Christie's. And at Christie's, what we found out was it's a bit more complicated than just access, in terms of what our perceived unfairness of young artists. So that was, so we had that entrepreneurial spirit, but like many of my friends, when I was in university, I thought what we wanted, what I was going to end up doing was either work in, finance or consultancy. And actually, before we build our business with Omar, we thought, okay, maybe we end up in, on the asset management side of some sorts. But that didn't happen. I actually followed my brother. He had this idea, which was, hey, we may not be able to change the world. I was quite disheartened. And I think I wanted to get as far away as possible from impact, which is why I think Christie's, the art auction world is, it's a different world. And I think pretty far away from refugees, and though they do amazing work as well. And I think that's where I was going. And then Omar was like, hey, you know, you might be disheartened, but maybe the most impactful thing we could do would be to give some of the opportunities we had to tens of millions of other young people. And if they have those opportunities and if they have that exposure, hopefully they will want to create change locally around them, whatever that may be, whether in business or as entrepreneurs or as future policy civil society leaders. That will be, you know, 10 million times more impactful than whatever we're to do. And so that's where the idea behind Goodwall came.
Well, it's interesting, and you gave me a kind of a good segue. When we founded Fifth Element, as I mentioned to you, it was based on the premise that leaders and business and their businesses can do way better when they're doing good. So it's evident that there's a thread or a theme that you were an early leader in understanding that and then trying to figure out how to make that happen. Share with us maybe an endeavor you did do, maybe with Omar separately, that you first saw that it does make sense and it is better to be economically more successful when you are doing good at the same time.
So, you know, the first TEDx talk I did was called The Business of Doing Good. I think there is room for both of those to go hand in hand. I just think there's so many opportunities. And when I say opportunities, there's so many problems out there that need to be solved. And some of our most consequential problems, which also happen to be some of our biggest opportunities, if we think of it as an entrepreneur, happen to have huge positive societal impact or could lead to huge positive societal impact if done properly. So that's like the first thing. When friends ask me this, I'm just like, look, there are huge problems that need solving, you know, energy access, food, et cetera, which if you solve for are huge economic opportunities, but are actually moving society forward. It just has to be done the right way. So that's number one. Number two, I think we see this from a unique selling point perspective, even in commoditized industries. So if you take like clothing, right? Clothing's been around for a long time. And, you know, what's the difference between a jacket from one company and a jacket from another without naming the companies? You know, Patagonia, if you take out its impact, what is left? You know, literally a hard shell that thousands of other companies do. I mean, we can talk about how they're more technologically advanced and this and that, but effectively there's almost no differentiation. Their differentiation is what they stand for. So I'm seeing, if we take from a business perspective, they're just business opportunities which are going to in itself lead to doing good. And then there are just behaviors as an organization that are going to allow that organization to differentiate itself. And I think Patagonia is an amazing example. Today, Patagonia has created disproportionate shareholder value. And I know no shareholder, but like disproportionate enterprise value through doing good.
100%. Consumers see it, talent sees it, where they want to go work at, and so on and so forth. You know, the fourth industrial revolution is about technology for the most part, AI, you know, VR, AR, et cetera, et cetera. But they say the fifth one is about humanity. And how does humanity benefit from the fourth one versus the other way around? And we try to focus on impact and talent and how they work together also. Share with us your innovative leadership at Goodwall. Where did the idea come from and where did the name come from?
So the name comes from essentially sharing the good things you do on a wall, right? So Goodwall. So it started off with like your volunteering activities, you know, positive things. And very quickly we realized actually, if we want young people to do good, that's great. But first you need to focus on connecting them to opportunities. So though we talked about, and I think a lot of people do this where they're like, oh, we want young people. I hear this often, you know, we want young people to solve. I was speaking at a conference a couple of weeks ago on youth leadership in the climate space. And one of the speakers said, oh, we count on young people to find solutions tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, good. So people who have done nothing to contribute to our problems are now being asked to find solutions to our biggest problems. And that's kind of how we started. We're like, look, ask young people to volunteer and do good and this. But actually, if one can give young people exposure to doing good, that means they see what's out there, they see the possibilities, but they're given the tools to maximize their potential. then we can talk about creating impact. And I would add a step further to that is they need to access opportunities that lead to livelihoods. So I don't think volunteering is a very sustainable solution, right? It lasts for a little bit and
not full time, that's for sure.
And actually, like, you know, activists have definitely had a very important role in society, but we need the 99% to contribute specifically on problems like we talked about, non-conflict, problems like conflict, or problems like climate adaptation or resilience. So we need young people to have the skill set such that, and the desire such that, when they're in positions of power, or as they're growing into positions of power, as civil society leaders within government, within corporates, or as entrepreneurs, they're working, in this particular example, with nature, not against it, rather than just.
So as founder and CEO of Goodwill, how have you created that basically skills-based social network? And you designed it so the youth have an ability to develop their skills, their leadership, but then, as we talked about, have a livelihood, be economically viable. Tell us, how does it work? And because these are the individuals that strategic leaders are looking for out there.
No, absolutely. So think of it as a mobile app. So we decided to focus on leveraging technology and partnerships to achieve scale. So a mobile app, think of it as TikTok meets LinkedIn, super engaging for young people to come on. They build, first of all, a profile that is optimized for people who don't have much to show. So it's really help young people get assessed who don't have the right internship, who don't have the right degree, and who don't know the right people. So that's what it's targeted at. And on that app, they get to participate in a community of like-minded hype masters who are supporting each other, encouraging each other, access opportunities from scholarships, internships, and jobs, and finally participate in free programming that is brought to them by corporates, governments, and foundations to help them build up their skills and get micro-credentialing in entrepreneurship, which we spoke about, or in digital skill building, in communications, in climate leadership. And essentially, we build out pathways for them alongside market leaders, such as, you know, the SAPs, the Accentures of this world, or the UNICEFs, the Generation Unlimited, who's the junior achievements, who are great partners of ours. And we're very proud to work alongside them and co-create alongside them. And our strategy has been really leverage our strengths and the strengths of our partners.
You know, it's interesting. A long time ago, I interviewed a young man who, on the bottom of his resume, it said Santa Claus Parade.
Okay.
And the only reason it hit me was when I lived in Winnipeg for a couple of years, I was the first Jewish guy to run the Santa Claus Parade over there. And I asked him, so you don't, I guess, yeah, you don't really have a lot of experience, but what did you do with this parade thing? And he said, well, I had to deal with the city and get permits. I had to get sponsorship. I had to work with the sponsors who were arguing about where they were going in the parade. I had to worry about what happened when it rained. I had to do budgets. And I said, yeah, I guess you really don't have much experience, right? So the experience can come in a lot of different ways. Like when you mentioned they don't have anything, sometimes we'd be shocked how much they do know by maybe any community thing that they did. And you do this globally, right?
Yeah, no, we do this globally, over 150 countries. We work through strategic partnerships. So right now, for example, in the Global South, particularly across Africa, we are working hand in hand with our partners at Generation Unlimited under this umbrella called YOMA. In other regions, we work with other strategic partners such as Monster.com in the US to essentially grow and serve as many young people as possible. What you said actually is 100% correct. When I say don't have much to show, I mean, really don't have much to show with the data points that our traditional CVs and resumes take into consideration,
right?
So you mentioned at the beginning of this, of our talk, you know, Ota, you went to this university. Okay, so you've got a centralized credentialing there, a certain brand, you know, whatever that may mean, I benefit from, and so you take me seriously for X, Y, and Z. Our young people, most young people, if we think of the billion young people entering the workforce over the next decade, won't have that.
Yep.
It's simple. 80% are going to come from the Global South, 90% from developing countries. So how can we make sure at scale we can value those experiences that you just mentioned that are actually, I would argue, even more important.
More real life.
And more real life than the ones that I've had. And so if we look at that very specifically, you know, the global north, it was, you know, someone who for Goodwill, if someone has worked at McDonald's, this is a bit cliche, I look at that three times because I say, okay, that's teamwork, that's resilience, that's, I want to know what hours did they work? Did they do that while studying? Okay, that's interesting for me, right? And I think actually, I was interviewed by this venture fund when I was in university, and I remember, you know, I hadn't worked one summer. I'd worked every summer since I was 16, but one summer I hadn't worked, and that was only because I was studying, and I actually wasn't hired for none of the investment banks, none of the private equity groups. Nobody took me because I didn't have an in, and I couldn't get a job. And it was just, you know, and I was interviewing with this gentleman at a very well-known venture fund. And he said, why didn't you work last summer? And I said, I couldn't, I just couldn't. I send out handwritten letters to like over 30 companies, you know, I like post make them. So I did make an effort and I researched them and everything. Yeah. And he said, I've been working since I was 16. And he said, why didn't you work at McDonald's? And I was like, what? I'm working so hard and this and that. But actually, it was such an interesting point, which was, you know, if you really talk about building up that work experience, it comes in so many forms. It can come through a micro credentialing online alongside a corporate. It could come through volunteering. It could come through, you know, working as your own micropreneur. Absolutely. But then the question comes, okay, first, you need to know that. You need to know those opportunities. And second, how do you showcase them? And that's where Goodwill really came in.
No, it's brilliant because there's so many people that bring value to the table, to themselves, to their families, to the community that we're not taking advantage of. So I think that's spectacular. One more question, because, you know, in LA, we always say leave them wanting more so we can do a sequel. So we'll have to figure that out. But one last question. One client told me in 2021, they said to me, you know, the year 2020 was the year that flew by slowly. And I said, what a great expression. And it seems like 2020, the pandemic, was yesterday and years ago, all at the same time. With all that said, what are you most grateful for and what are you most hopeful for?
I mean, there's a lot I'm very grateful for. I think I'm grateful that we're having this conversation now and we're speaking about finding ways to scalably have positive impact in our respective ways, and how can we really come together? We were speaking just before on partnerships, on the work we're going to be doing on Nonflict together. This is so exciting for me. And on an individual level, that groups of people from different continents are able to come together, think yeah. about that, are literally able to come together and plan out global activations with actually very little resources, thanks to technology and thanks to partnerships. We were just speaking about some of the other partners we're bringing on board for this program, which is just allowing us to amplify impact. That's what I'm most excited about, that there are great people out there that are being, and we were speaking about your other business, which is bringing leaders into positions where they can have a positive impact. And I think, you know, leaders have such an important role in moving the needle and moving in the right direction. So that's what I'm excited about. And then more, you know, at a macro level, others have said this, you know, it's an incredibly exciting time to be alive. I mean, of course, there are incredibly challenging times for everyone, really. Yeah. Most people, some people more than others, from war, injustice, inequality being accentuated, the skills gap growing. We can go on about that. But as I speak to many of the young people we work with, it's very easy to rattle off problems. What I would like to focus on are the opportunities to make a difference. And I think, I don't know if there's been a time in human history where there've been more opportunities to make a difference at the scale that's possible than now.
Well, that's why I'm glad that you're here on the Leaders Who Care series, because you care about that. And what's great about it is it can again be economically, you know, viable, as well as socially and environmentally viable. And what a great opportunity to not just make money only, or not just work for less at a nonprofit, but actually do them together. So thanks for sharing all that. Thanks for being a Leaders Who Care and a new friend, and lots to look forward to ahead.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.